Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loughlin. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. Coming up on the show tonight, we'll check in with one of the rookies on the rookie tour. Linebacker Randell Johnson from Florida Atlantic, Bill's seventh-round draft pick, joins us at 7:30. The NFL spring meetings are over. John Crick from the Toronto Sun was there. We'll check with him at 8 o'clock tonight. And Chris Perkins brings us up to date on the Dolphins. He covers the team for the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel.
This place is pandemonium.
Down to the one, into the end zone. Touchdown, Fred Jackson. Touchdown, Buffalo.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go again, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Thanks very much for tuning in on the air until 9 o'clock tonight, and happy to have you with us here tonight. Thanks for tuning in. Another day of voluntary off-season conditioning for the Buffalo Bills players here today. Veterans and some rookies here working out on their own. They go through the day-long, well, maybe half a day, a little bit longer than half a day workouts, and that went on here today. And the rookies then boarded buses around 2 this afternoon for the annual rookie tour, the 7th annual Buffalo Bills rookie tour. It's a great idea that started, obviously, 7 years ago when the brand-new Buffalo Bills get a taste of what it's like to live in Buffalo, to get around Buffalo, a sense of the history of Buffalo and the culture of Buffalo. They left today at 2 o'clock. They went right to Niagara Falls to Prospect Point. Got a great look at the falls. I mean, you can't really live in Western New York without taking a look at Niagara Falls, right? They did that for an hour or so. Then they came back to Buffalo, went to New Era Cap Company on Delaware Avenue, the corporate headquarters with the great New Era Cap store right there at 160 Delaware Avenue in downtown Buffalo. I mean, who wouldn't want to hang there for a little bit? Then they went over to the Naval Park for a visit over there, and they got got a chance to talk with some veterans over at the Naval Park. And then right about now, they're at the Buffalo Transportation Museum, the Pierce Aero Museum on Seneca Street in downtown Buffalo. They're going to have some dinner there. So a full day for the rookies. I mean, this is their afternoon. They started the day by working out here at One Bills Drive, and then a full afternoon getting a sense of what Buffalo's like, what the culture is like, what the area is like, and that's what gets us to the phone calls tonight. That's what we want to hear from you. If you were in charge of that rookie tour, where would you take the rookie Buffalo Bills? There were 18 of them today, all 7 draft picks and 11 undrafted free agents who are now on the roster. Where would you take them? What would you teach them? What would you want them to know about the history of Buffalo, the culture of Buffalo, the background of the team, the relationship between the town and the team, the rookie tour? Where would your Bills rookie tour take those rookies? I have some ideas on that, but you may want to phone in yours as well. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. And you can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. And already some tweets coming in on that, some ideas. Tony Bowman tweets in, one thing for sure, they'll have to develop a taste for chicken wings. Something tells me they already may have that. Bill tweets in, I'd want to tell him, play hard and the city will always support you. Brian Worthy tweets in, beat the Patriots, please. Matthew Melligan tweets in, no better fans in the world, and Duff's has the better wings. So your thoughts on what you would want those rookies to know about Buffalo, about Western New York. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Here's what I do, part of my rookie tour. They didn't ask, but one of the things I would do, I would take them, believe it or not, to the Darwin Martin House just for a little bit in North Buffalo, the great Frank Lloyd Wright-designed house in the Delaware Park section of Buffalo. I would. I'd take them there. And you don't have to do the in-depth tour, but just to give them a sense of the history of this place, what it was like in Buffalo, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, how some of the greats in architecture set up shop here, including Frank Lloyd Wright. It's an amazing museum, an amazing start to museum right next door. If you've never done it, I would highly recommend it. I would make that part of my stop. I'd take him, believe it or not, and maybe this is too much history, I'd take him to the Theodore Roosevelt inaugural site on Delaware Avenue. You ever been there? It's a great museum. I mean, think about it. The President of the United States was inaugurated right here, right there on Delaware Avenue in 1901. history, comes alive there. I believe the gun that shot President McKinley is on display there. Tell them the whole story. Pan American Exposition, 1901. Buffalo was the center of, the Western Hemisphere. It was like a World's Fair centered in Buffalo in Western New York. And the president got shot. And the vice president, hiking on in the Adirondacks, had to run down the hill, take the train to Buffalo, and get sworn in right there at Delaware Avenue. I'd want them to know that. I'd want them to give them a sense of what kind of a place that they are living in, what kind of the history of the place in which they're living. I'd take them to restaurants, too, and not maybe fancy restaurants. They've probably been to those. I'd take them to places that Buffalo people go to. I'd take them to Charlie the Butcher, believe it or not. I'd take them to the Swanee House down by First Niagara Center. Get some good wings down there. Duff's is great. Anchor Bar is great. There's a million different places to get wings, but there's history at that place in particular and a million other places. You may have some ideas, too. If you were putting together the itinerary for the Buffalo Bills rookie tour here in Buffalo and Western New York, where would you take them? Where would you want them to go? Give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. What would you want them to know about the team, the history of the team? I guess I would show them the video of the comeback game, at least the highlight video of the comeback game, kind of give them a sense of what the team history is all about. In 1984, there was a great 25-year history of the Bills put together. I think I'd want them to see that and maybe even a more recent history of what's happened in the last 30 years. So maybe the most recent history of the Buffalo Bills on video, provided by NFL Films. There's a lot they have to know. Obviously, they're not all going to be here when the cutdowns are made. Obviously, they're not all going to play their entire careers here. But I think to indoctrinate them into the history of Buffalo, the culture of Buffalo, the real-life culture of Buffalo, and what real-life people do here, that'd be some of the ideas I would have. You may have other ideas. Phone lines are open. If you'd like to weigh in, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What would you put on your itinerary for the Buffalo Bills rookie tour? They're in the process of finishing it up as we speak. Maybe you have some ideas. Maybe I've missed some things. It's not all about history. I mean, there are places in Buffalo that are just cool places to hang out. Maybe you just take them for a walk in the Elmwood Village. Let them walk up and down the street, get a sense of what that neighborhood's all about. Maybe you take them through South Buffalo or Hurdle Avenue, some of the great restaurants and shops on Hurdle, or even out to the suburbs. There's East Aurora. There's great places all over the place. Just an idea of what you would want on that itinerary for the Buffalo Bills rookie tour. On that tour right now is Bills linebacker Randell Johnson, the seventh-round draft pick from Florida Atlantic University. We're going to interrupt his tour at the bottom of this hour and talk to him about what he's seen so far, what he's like so far, and talk a little football as well. He's the linebacker from Florida Atlantic, and he's going to join us live on the line at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, we're going to get a recap tonight of the NFL spring owners meetings that just wrapped up in Atlanta, Georgia last night. A lot going on there. They tabled the discussion about expansion of the playoffs. But they did talk about a few other issues. They awarded a Super Bowl to Minneapolis, Minnesota for Super Bowl 52. And there was substantial talk about the future of the Bills, not formally, but among the owners. And one of the guys who talked to some of those owners is going to join us at 8 o'clock. John Crick covers the NFL for the Toronto Sun. We bump into him at the Combine, at the Senior Bowl, and all over the NFL. And he covers a lot of Bills football. He's going to join us live at 8 o'clock just for a sense of what the owners' meeting was all about, what went on there. And we'll get a sense from him of what the thinking is about the Buffalo Bills and the long-term future of the Buffalo Bills based on conversations he had with the owners in Atlanta this week. And that also deals with Toronto, obviously, and the interests in Toronto in buying an NFL team. So John Crick is going to join us at 8 o'clock. And at 8:30, we've been doing this over the last several days, kind of recapping the draft from the perspective of the other AFC East teams. Last night, we talked about the Patriots with Mike Reese from ESPN in Boston. Tonight, Chris Perkins, who covers the Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He'll join us at 8:30 tonight. We'll talk about the Dolphins' draft moves. We'll talk about what the Dolphins think of their draft. That's coming up at 8:30 tonight. But we want to talk to you about the Bills rookie tour. What would you suggest would be on that itinerary? They are wrapping it up today, but maybe you have some ideas I didn't think of. Phone lines open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Brenda Lacey tweets in, Albright Knox, Elmwood and Hurdle Strips, and the new medical campus. Yeah. Mike D, jet boats on the Niagara River in Lewiston. Excellent idea. Wouldn't that be excellent? I mean, what a great thrilling ride that would be. Joe G tweets it, I would take him to the Ellicottville Brewery. Yeah, they probably can find the breweries themselves, But take them to Ellicottville for sure to see that cool little community. Here's a call from Carl in Clarence. Carl, good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I would take them to Larkinville, and I would take them to the silo in Lewiston. But quickly, I just want to take you on a quick route to take them from the airport to downtown. This is the way to do it if you want to impress a new person to Buffalo.
Okay.
And you're from Buffalo. You know what it is. Come down Cayuga, beautiful homes, make a left on Main, all the way through Williamsville, down to Depew, make a right on Depew, you know the beautiful homes on Depew, down to Parkside, make a left on Parkside, by the zoo, make a right on Amherst, and take them down Nottingham or Middlesex, your choice, left on Delaware through the miracle Million Mile, Millionaire's Row,
yeah,
to downtown Buffalo. Or you could take them straight down Genesee, and they're probably going to wait to get on the next plane out of here.
That sounds like a real estate tour, Carl. It sounds like you want to show them real estate.
If you want to impress somebody, I always bring people in from the airport to downtown via that route, and they go, this isn't Buffalo. Yes, it is.
Yeah, and you're right. If you go down the 33, you're thinking, oh, yeah, this is Buffalo.
Oh, my God, this one, that's the second worst route.
What's the worst? Genesee Street? Is that what you said?
What's that?
What's the worst route? You said 33 is second worst?
Yeah, that's such a worst route. I mean, Genesee would be the worst route, just straight down Genesee. Oh, my God. They turn right around, say, loop me around, and get me back on the plane.
I like that idea. Do people fall for it when you take them on that route through all the way down? Anybody say, wow,
yeah,
anybody say it takes an hour and a half to get downtown from the airport? What's going on?
No. It's a quick tour. Believe me, it's maybe 10 minutes more than down Genesee Street or 33. But when I take them on that route, they go, I had no idea how beautiful Buffalo was.
Love that idea. Carl, that's a great idea. Thanks very much, especially the weather like it was today. Can you imagine how all those streets look, how all those neighborhoods look? Love that idea. The Bills rookie tour going on today, and we're going to hear from Randell Johnson, the Bills linebacker from Florida Atlantic. He's part of that tour today. He's going to join us at 7:30. We'll get his thoughts on what it was like today to get a real taste of Buffalo. But let's hear yours. What would you include on that itinerary? Or what would you want to say to those rookies? What would you want to tell them? Where would you want to point them to get a sense of what Buffalo's all about and what playing for the Bills is all about? Phone lines open, 803-0550. Or you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. And you can do it via Twitter as well, at John Murphy Show. Give us a call. What would be on your itinerary? What would be on your list of things for those rookies to know? We'll get back to the calls in a moment. Just a little bit of news from the Buffalo Bills today, and the Bills announced this afternoon that they have hired the team in place to move forward with the sale of the franchise. Morgan Stanley has been hired to serve as financial advisor, and the law firm of Proskauer Rose has been engaged to serve as legal advisor during the sale process. According to the Bills statement, the process will be designed to ensure that the club continues to comply with and remains faithful to its obligations under the NFL's rules and regulations, as well as its obligations to the state and county pursuant to the lease. This is important. The statement says it is anticipated the transaction team will begin contacting prospective buyers within the next 30 days. So that is moving forward, the sale of the franchise. Within the next 30 days, the transaction team of Morgan Stanley, the investment bankers, and Proskauer Rose, the lawyers, will begin contacting prospective buyers. The process, I believe, is they will contact them, see if they are interested, provide them with essentially a book, you know, a prospectus, if you will, of here's what the franchise is all about. Here's the, you know, the assets of the franchise, what we think it's worth. And let us know if you want to make a bid. So it is the first step. Russ Brandon, the president, CEO of the Buffalo Bills, appeared this morning on the WGR Morning Show on her flagship here in Buffalo with Howard Simon and Jeremy White. And Russ is just back, as you know, from the NFL owners' spring meetings in Atlanta, Georgia, where many of the owners expressed support for keeping the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. Russ Brandon was asked if he's surprised that there's that much support to keep the Bills here in Buffalo.
Being in that room for the last 17 years with these gentlemen has proved to be invaluable. They obviously know our business well, as we know the businesses, of other franchises and how we go about our business. So, you know, we try to be good stewards of our brand into the National Football League. I think they appreciate that. The relationship that they had with our Hall of Fame owner, Ralph Wilson, obviously that was really more the focus and talking about Ralph's legacy and what he's meant to the National Football League. But, you know, from our standpoint, we're very mindful of how we run our business and promote our brand moving forward.
So as Russ, I guess, the paraphrase indicated, he's not surprised that the owners are aware of the importance of the Bills and are aware of what the Bills have done to strengthen their brand. One of the things that it seems to have come out of the owners' meetings this week, and we'll talk with John Crick about this, this has come out over the last few months, the non-relocation agreement, the restrictions on moving the franchise out of Buffalo, which have to play into anyone's consideration of the future of the franchise. Russ Brandon, Bills president and CEO, was asked if any of the out-of-town groups that may be interested in purchasing the Bills have maybe slowed down their pursuit of the franchise because of how hard it would be to move the football team.
When the lease was constructed, we provided, Mr. Wilson gave us the opportunity to provide a nice runway to have a long-term solution. And obviously there are some different levers within the lease that really focus on trying to making it work here in Western New York. And, you know, I constantly asked about a new stadium, but our focus over at One Bills Drive right now is on the $130 million renovation that we have going on that I think you're going to be surprised. It's going to significantly impact the fan experience in a positive way.
The renovations continue. The construction workers are still here, and armies of them on a daily basis now that the weather has broken. But back to the first point, the there are some different levers within the lease, Russ Brandon said, and Mr. Wilson gave us a nice runway to a long-term solution. I do think that is a underrated aspect of the lease that was signed in December of 2012, which included the non-relocation agreement. Essentially, and a couple of people have pointed this out. We'll talk with John Crick about this. The lease that the Bills agreed to with the state and the county back in December 2012 works out very well for kind of easing this transition to new ownership and ensuring that it is going to be difficult to move the franchise out of Buffalo. I think that was underrated. And, you know, I can recall back on March 26th, the day Mr. Wilson passed away, there was panic in some quarters. That's it. They're done here in Buffalo. Well, no, not at all, because of the December 2012 lease, which calls, you know, and you know that you've read the terms now about, you know, a 6-year period, six more seasons where the lease is ironclad, and then three more seasons beyond that where the lease remains in force. It's not as simple as just, you know, writing a check and breaking the lease. It's not that simple at all. And I think that affords the Buffalo Bills and the county and the state, that affords them time to put together a deal to move forward, whether it's with a new stadium or a renovated stadium here in Orchard Park under new ownership. I do think there's a bit of genius in that lease that was constructed back in December of 2012. One of the things that came out of the owners' meetings in Atlanta the past few days, the discussion about a new stadium and not a renovated stadium in Orchard Park moving into the future through the next lease under the next owner of the team. The commissioner even mentioned in his news conference at the wrap-up meeting of the owners' meetings on Tuesday that a new stadium is probably in the works for Buffalo and Western New York. And Russ Brandon, appearing this morning on WGR Radio on Howard Simon's show, was asked if a new stadium is something that's being pushed by the league, including Commissioner Roger Goodell.
Well, I think that a stadium long-term is obviously something that needs to be looked at, but that's really what the function of the new stadium working group is. That also is a function of the lease, where members of the Bills organization, the county, and the state are together and methodically going through a process to see if a new stadium makes sense. And eventually, that very well may be the case, but you know, we have an opportunity now with this renovation to, again, have a runway where we can go through the studies and the demographics and have an understanding as a group, as a community, what the best solution is moving forward.
I think it's a great idea. Again, nobody's going to construct a stadium here, it doesn't appear, with a gun to their head. Nobody's going to be looking at the clock saying, hurry up, we got to get a stadium built. There's a process here, and as Russ said this morning on the radio, a methodical process to study what's needed and if a new stadium is needed. That process is underway. Thanks again to the stadium lease that was signed back in December 2012. So, that's the Bills news today. Again, we're talking a little bit about the Bills rookie tour. We're going to hear from linebacker Randell Johnson coming up in a few minutes. But if you have thoughts on what should be in that rookie tour, give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Around the league, couple of news items. First-round draft picks coming in the fold. Atlanta Falcons signed their top draft pick, tackle Jake Matthews today, the number 6 overall pick. They're going to start him at right tackle, it appears. They're going to have Sam Baker at left tackle, but Jake Matthews will probably get the start at right tackle until it takes over on the left side. So Jake Matthews signed his rookie contract with the Atlanta Falcons today. The Oakland Raiders have signed second-round draft pick Derek Carr to a four-year contract, the quarterback out of Fresno State. NFL media reports it's worth $5.4 million. Carr expected to begin the season behind veteran Matt Schaub, who got $8 million in guarantees to be the quarterback of the Raiders just a couple of months ago. Seattle Seahawks Super Bowl champs were honored today at the White House. President Barack Obama honoring the Seattle Seahawks, the Super Bowl champions. He poked some fun at Richard Sherman, the cornerback, saying he was going to let him have the podium but decided against it. And the Seahawks said they were extremely happy. Marshawn Lynch did not attend. A handful of players who did not attend. Obama said, "I wanted to tell Marshawn how much I admire his approach to the press. I want to get some tips from him." Marshawn obviously avoided the media at the expense of his pocketbook during the Super Bowl. Johnny Manziel, every move for him in Cleveland is going to be dissected, including his moves at the Cleveland Browns organized team activity. Brian Hoyer got the first team reps today at the Cleveland Browns offseason practice. Johnny Manziel was the third quarterback through the rotation, and Browns coach Mike Pettine said he's inconsistent on the second day in the field. Pettine quoted as saying, "A lot of it is mental. Manziel worried more about getting the formation right, making sure the motion's correct. Then he's got his cadence, and he's got to worry about where the guys are." So they're bringing him in very slowly. Johnny Manziel, third through the quarterback rotation at the Cleveland Browns offseason conditioning camp. And finally, Indianapolis Colts pass rusher Robert Mathis, the linebacker, says if he could do it all over again, he would have checked before taking the substance that is banned by the NFL, but he's accepting his four-game suspension for violating the league's drug policy. He used the drug Clomid, which is prohibited by the league. Mathis says he was trying to use the drug to help he and his wife have a baby. Says he relied on urologist advice in taking the drug. He apparently did not go to his team and tell them he was interested in taking the drug. He ran afoul of the substance abuse policy, and now he's out for the first four games for the Indianapolis Colts. That's the news of the day from both here at One Bills Drive and around the NFL. The Bills getting their offseason conditioning program work done in the morning. Then the rookies hit the buses for the rookie tour, which is going on right now. Should be wrapping up very shortly. We're going to take a break here, and when we return, we hope to be on the line with Randall Johnson, Bills linebacker, seventh rounder from Florida Atlantic. He's part of that rookie tour. I'm eager to see what he thinks of his first real look at Buffalo and Western New York. He's coming up next when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A couple of weeks from the draft, that was 2 weeks ago, and the Bills rookies have been around here for a little bit more than a week. They've gone through their rookie minicamp over the weekend, and today they went through their rookie tour, the Bills' seventh annual rookie tour, winding up as we speak. Joining us live on the line right now, Buffalo's seventh-round draft pick, one of their seventh-round picks, linebacker from Florida Atlantic, Randall Johnson. Hi, Randall. Thanks for coming on the air with us tonight.
How y'all doing?
We're doing great. How are you doing? That's the question. How'd you like the rookie tour today?
It was great, man. I had a great experience.
Anytime you can get up close and personal with Niagara Falls, I don't care how old you are, I don't care how many times you've been there, Niagara Falls is pretty stunning, isn't it?
It is, man. It was my first time being there, and it was crazy.
Is it bigger than you thought?
Yeah, very.
What did you think? I mean, you can really, when you stand, you guys went right to Prospect Point, right up next to the American Falls, right? You can really feel the power of all that water, can't you?
You can see it. You can feel it. The mist all in your face. It was just crazy. It was amazing.
You think you'll go back there, Randall?
Oh, sure. I'm a definitely.
And then from there, I believe you went to New Era Cap Company, right?
Yeah.
Had you been there before since you've been in Buffalo for a week or two?
Oh, I haven't. I've been to the stadium and back home, everything.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem, right? And that's the good thing about this rookie tour. You guys have been really grinding for the last, week or 10 days. It's got to feel pretty good, even though you're still with the guys you work with, it's got to feel pretty good just to get off campus a little bit and get a look at your surroundings, I would think, Randall, huh?
Yeah, it was a great experience. Just happy to get away from the stadium. Yeah, it was. Seeing the city how it is and learning the Buffalo area and things like that.
Randall, you are a native of Miami, right?
Yeah.
You're about as far away geographically, weather-wise, and in a lot of other ways than you could be from Miami. Do you think you'll like it here in Buffalo and Western New York compared to Miami?
So far, so good, man. I love the weather. I ain't used to the cold, but I'm adapted to it so far, but I'm great. I love Buffalo so far.
What do you like about it so far?
Just the atmosphere. Seeing things I ain't never seen before. I seen a deer for the first time.
Okay.
So, it was just crazy. The whole Buffalo experience is crazy.
We're on the line with Randell Johnson. He's the Bills' seventh-round draft pick, the linebacker from Florida Atlantic University. Randell, what's the first week and a half or so been like for you here in terms of, you know, trying to acclimate yourself to the National Football League? Do you feel like your head is spinning at all?
No, not at all. Got great coaches. Just getting into the playbook every day and every night, just grinding, learning what I need to learn, and add it to the field. That's about it.
They gave you, I believe just this week, they gave you guys your iPads, right, to start looking at the playbook on the iPad. Is that right?
Yeah, yes, sir.
Did you do something like that at Florida Atlantic? Anything similar to that?
Oh, no. We had a big playbook. It was great paper and things like that. Never had no electronic things, nothing like that.
The thing with the iPad or whatever, the tablet form of the playbook is you can't get away from it. You take it home with you, right? I mean, you could literally go home and look at that all night long when you're home.
Yeah, and that's what I do. I'm always watching film and seeing what I can get better at. It's always in my book bag, but it's always on me most of the time.
Hey, Randell, tell me about the draft experience a couple of weeks ago. You had to wait until Saturday to hear your name called. Were you expecting that, or do you think you might be a Friday draft pick, a second or third rounder?
No, I know I was from 5th to 7th, but I just ain't had no interest from the Bills at all. So it was just a real shock for me. But I feel like I fit very well with the Bills' defense and their teams and things, what they run.
I read where you had people from the Seahawks, or even on draft week, that came to spend some time with you, right? The Dolphins,
yeah.
Tampa Bay. So you going into the draft, you probably figured it'd be one of those teams that came down to see you.
Yeah, most definitely. I know the Seahawks going to grab me late that seventh round. They was already telling me they're going to get me, but Bill just called me before, and it was just crazy. I was happy. I didn't even care where I was at, where I landed. I was just happy for this opportunity.
In this Buffalo Bills defense, how do you foresee them using you, Randell? Are you an outside linebacker type? Like, what do you think they'll have you doing?
I'll tell you the truth. Right now, I'm just outside linebacker. I'm playing the wheel, understand, learning both positions. And right now, I'm just playing my part, you know. They don't care where they put me, I'll make the best of it.
One of the things that they've talked about that stands out from you is your wingspan, 34 and an eighth arm length, as big as it really gets for a linebacker your size. Do you feel like that's one of your strengths, how much, you know, your wingspan, how much territory you can cover?
That could be one of them, but I'm very physical, I'm very quick, I got nice feet, so it's more to also.
You know what surprised me, Randell? I guess I wasn't aware of Florida Atlantic's football program that much, but you had you and a teammate drafted into the league this year, and you guys than held your own in the Conference USA. You guys play in that level and play pretty well, don't you?
Yeah. We came to Conference USA last year. We handled ourselves very well. We had a 6-6 record, best record we had since I've been there. We handled ourselves very well.
What was it about Florida Atlantic that got you to go there? I know you were pretty highly recruited coming out of North Miami. Why Florida Atlantic, which is what, just up the road in Boca Raton, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it was 45 minutes away from Miami. It was close to home. I wanted my family to come to every game, and I liked the coaching staff, Howard Snellenberger. He recruited me, and I just liked the atmosphere out there. It was a new program, and I wanted to be the face of the program. That's why I chose FAU.
Yeah, you mentioned Howard Schnellenberger, a legendary coach in college and the pros for that matter, and a guy who coached Jim Kelly in college football. What did you learn from Coach Schnellenberger?
I learned a lot. You know, I had him for my 3 years I had him as my coach. He was a great teacher, role model, and everything. Everything about him, he's just a great person.
And then
to the day.
And then he was replaced, I believe, by Carl Pellini, who you had for, what, a year and a half. And that ended kind of in a strange fashion for Coach Pellini last October, didn't it?
Yeah, it was crazy. My whole experience with that was a little shaky, but still had a great outcome with that. But, you know, I don't know. I can't really talk about that.
How much did that, you know, screw up your senior season? Not just you, but the whole Florida Atlantic team to have your coach fired midway through?
Well, when he got fired, It really sparked us up, you know, because we won after he got fired, we won the last four games of our season. So it really didn't faze us too much.
I saw one of the wins came against New Mexico State, and you made a pretty big play on special teams, a block punt that went for a touchdown. Tell us about that play.
Yeah, I just did my assignment, hit the A-gap, and I just ran through the punter. That was it. And one of my teammates, Damian Florida, picked the ball up and scored. That was about it.
And you you guys did play, I guess, FIU in what they call the Shula Bowl. You guys play every year, the final game of the year in the Shula Bowl down at in the Dolphin Stadium, right?
Yeah, it used to be at the Dolphin Stadium, but now we just swap it up from our FAU Stadium to FIU Stadium now.
Okay. And you have a new stadium at Florida Atlantic, right?
Yeah, I've been there for 3 years.
So it's a three-year-old stadium?
Yeah, this year I make three.
Hey, Rendell, what do you think you could bring to the Buffalo Bills? I mean, you mentioned the big plays you made on special teams. What is it you think that might earn you a spot on this Buffalo Bills roster?
Just doing everything my coaches tell me to do and just playing my part. Like, just like I did at FAU, if it comes to be a special team guy my first year, that's what I do. If it's anyone on the field to play wheel linebacker or an extra linebacker, I'm going to be that guy. So whatever it takes.
Well, we wish you the best of luck. I'm glad you guys and your teammates, the rookies, had a chance to go out and see a little bit of Buffalo in Western New York and get your face wet with the mist from Niagara Falls. And thanks for spending a little bit of time with us on the phone tonight, Rendell. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
All right, that's Rendell Johnson. He's the Buffalo Bills' seventh rounder, one of their seventh rounders, the outside linebacker from Florida Atlantic, 6'4", 245-pounder. Obviously, special teams will go a long way in determining his future, at least this year. At FAU, he was on every special teams unit, 41 tackles for FAU last year. Played a little defensive line, but most of the time as a linebacker. He had some injury concerns in his first year at FAU for the Owls at FAU, but for the most part, pretty productive, and obviously the kind of size-speed ratio that gets people excited. 6'4", 245 pounds. He had an outstanding pro day workout, and that got everybody's attention, I'm sure. And who knows? He was drafted along with another FAU teammate, Keith Reeser, a cornerback, went in the fifth round to the San Francisco 49ers. Their first year, he said, in Conference USA, and they got a chance to go 6-6. And under weird circumstances, their head coach, Carl Pellini, was fired midway through the year and replaced by Brian Wright. Now I believe they're looking for a new coach down there at FAU as well. So some disruption for him in his final year. But we'll see. I think he had a pretty good first weekend. And now I'm sure it's catch-up time with the veterans all in and the voluntary offseason conditioning program and the OTAs to begin next Wednesday. All right, we're talking about the rookies. We're talking about the rookie tour, which went on today for the Buffalo Bills rookie. And we're soliciting your opinions. What would you recommend that these rookies do as they indoctrinate themselves into Buffalo and Western New York? What would be on your itinerary for Bills rookies? Where would you send them? What would you tell them? What would you tell them about the town or the team or the franchise history? Where would you take them? Where restaurants would you send them to? Let us know. Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter. You can reach out at John Murphy Show on Twitter. Let us know what you think. We'll take a break and come back and maybe get to more phone calls. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Rendell Johnson, Bills linebacker from Florida Atlantic, seventh rounder. They're just kind of rolling in back here at the stadium. That's kind of a grind when you think about it, those rookies. They've been here for a little bit over a week now, and every day the same routine. Get here early in the morning, go through the workouts. They had the three-day weekend minicamp, obviously, and then go back at nearby housing and get ready to do it again the next day. It's not real glamorous. I'm glad they got out of the stadium area today and chance to get out there and look around. Rendell Johnson, we talked about his pro day. I looked up the numbers. A 4.6 second 40-yard dash in his pro day, a 38.5-inch vertical leap, 10-foot broad jump. That's what got him drafted. He didn't have a ton of production at Florida Atlantic, but a tremendous physical specimen. And, if he contributes on special teams, he may find himself on the 53-man roster. Talking about the rookie tour, the Bills wrapping up. They went to Niagara Falls, to New Era Cap, to Buffalo Naval and Servicemen's Park, and to the Piers Aero Museum. What would you include on that itinerary? What would you want those rookies to see in Buffalo or know about Buffalo? Give us a call. 803-0550 is the number. Here's a call from Bill in Black Rock. Hello, Bill.
today.
Great, thanks.
I think a good place for them to go is the Old Orchard Inn out in East Aurora. I don't know if you've ever been there or not.
I have,
before.
Yes.
But it's kind of a cool, quaint little place that has a nice fine dine where you can, you know, relax and just look out into the wilderness, kind of.
Yeah, it's a good place.
And have a nice meal.
Bill, it's a great place, and I have been there. We're talking about 21, 22, 23-year-old young men. You think?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
I just somewhere different, you know, if they don't want to go out for, you know, a party night or something like that, just somewhere to go and relax after all the practices and everything like that.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Here's Dave in Cheektowaga. Dave, what's on your mind tonight?
Hi. Take them where the NFL started, on the old Rock Pile War Memorial Stadium. Seen that there was no parking, only for Wawas.
Yeah.
And the stadium had no fancy dancy, nothing. And that's where it all started.
I like that idea, over where War Memorial Stadium was. I like that. Now Johnny Wiley Stadium over there on the east side. Not a bad idea. Thanks, Dave, for the suggestion. Yeah, I think it would give them a sense, maybe, of the history of the franchise. A couple of suggestions via Twitter. Bill's number one fan tweets in, to be honest, most of these rookies will be playing for other teams in 5 years. I get them focused on the here and now. You don't know that. You don't know where they're going to be in 5 years. Most of them, I mean, what's the average lifespan in the NFL career? 3 years, 4 years? So, but still, I think you want them to have a sense of where they're at and what the franchise is all about. And G.W. Bergen tweets, and stay away from the Canadian Folk Art Dance Festival. I know what that is. I've heard about that. And, see if you can keep them away from that. Good luck. All right, it is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO as the rookies wrapped up their mini camp this week. One of the guys we talked to was fourth-round draft pick Ross Cockrell. He is the cornerback from Duke. We had a chance to fire a few questions at him along with other media members about the rookie weekend mini camp and what he thinks he accomplished.
It was a learning experience, you know, just adjusting to the speed of the game, the speed of the receivers, getting to go against Sammy and some of the other guys. They're all explosive, and you got to learn how to adjust to longer and deeper and faster routes.
What do you think of Coach Henderson in particular, his attention to detail? I mean, every step is measured. Every movement is he sees.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Coach Henderson's been around the game for 30-plus years. He's coached some of the best defensive backs in the league. And he's seen it all, done it all. And with a guy like that, it's great because he can help take your game to the next level.
Are you ready for his particular brand of hands-on coaching? I mean, he. I saw him do it last year to guys here. He stays on guys, and it almost means like he likes you if he's on you, I think.
Well, I mean, that's how the saying goes. If a coach is talking to you, he likes you. If he's not talking to you, then you should be worried. So as long as he's chirping at me, I'm going to be okay.
I think he is. Ross Cockrell thinks he'll be okay as long as Coach Henderson is paying attention to him. Another call here about the rookie tour from Brandon and Clarence. Hi, Brandon. Welcome.
How you doing, John?
Great.
I was just thinking about how Mario Williams came here, because Kyle Williams raved about outdoors, like the hunting and the fishing in the area. And I hunt and fish out in Western New York, and you really can't beat the outdoors in this area. I'm not sure they all do that, but if any of them wanted to pick it up, there's not a better spot than Western New York.
I think that's a really good point. That's a really good point, Brandon. Thanks. And they'll find their way through, you know, most of their indoctrination to the community obviously is going to be through their teammates, as you mentioned, and Kyle Williams helping out Mario Williams, getting him acclimated. Most of what they know about the town and where to go and to pursue their own off-field, hobbies, that'll come from dealing with their teammates. There's no question about that. And they find their way. You know, they're young guys who have a lot of energy. Some of them have a lot of money, and they're willing to, extend themselves a little bit. So that's a good point. A veteran guy like Kyle Williams might be able to help some of those guys make their way around Buffalo and Western New York. The rookie tour, just wrapping up for the Buffalo Bills rookies as they spent really since 2 o'clock this afternoon getting a taste of what's out there in Buffalo and Western New York. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we got one more hour to go on the show. Coming up at 8:30, we'll check in on the Dolphins from the perspective of their draft a couple of weeks ago, what they added in the draft, what's been going on with the Miami Dolphins. We'll talk with Chris Perkins, who covers that team for the South Florida Sun Sentinel at 8:30. But at the top of the hour, we're going to talk with John Crick from the Toronto Sun. He is just back from the NFL Spring Owners Meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, where the Buffalo Bills were discussed informally by several of the owners, and there were a couple of other formal moves made by the NFL owners. So we'll get the lowdown from John Crick from the Toronto Sun coming up in the next hour as well. One more hour to go. Stick around. We've got a lot more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show. We're here till 9 o'clock tonight. And coming up later on at the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the Miami Dolphins as we visit in with the Bills cousins in the AFC East. We've done the Patriots last night, the Jets last week. And tonight, Chris Perkins from South Florida Sun Sentinel joins us to update us on the Dolphins and their draft. But just yesterday, last night, the two-day NFL Spring Owners Meetings wrapped up in Atlanta, Georgia, and covering those meetings for his newspaper, the Toronto Sun, is John Crick, who covers the Buffalo Bills and the NFL for the Toronto Sun. He's live on the line with us from Toronto. John, just back from Atlanta. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We appreciate you taking the time.
Always happy to join you, Murph. Thanks.
Hey, a lot going on there, and as far as the Buffalo Bills were concerned, nothing formal, which I guess was expected, but it seemed like you and several others were able to take the temperature of several NFL owners about the Bills and their future in Buffalo. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, it was. Adam Bonini and Tim Graham of the News, the three of us were on lobby duty, which is always fun. You know, you just feel so good, you know, stalking owners for hours and hours, getting dismissive looks from hotel people.
I've done it.
Like,
I've been there.
In the hallway hanging on the wainscoting. But, you know, that's what we do, try to get some information. And between us all, we got some good stuff, I think.
Is it your sense, John, and I want to get into what was said, but is it your sense that the future of the Bills is something that's on the minds of these other owners? I mean, they had other things on their agenda, and the Bills weren't really on a formal agenda, but is this something they think about, care about, talk about, do you think?
You know what? I asked that of John Mara, the New York Giants co-owner, the president and CEO, and one of the biggest wheels in the NFL, really. I had a chance to talk to him alone briefly, and he said that, exactly, I said, is this something the owners are talking about? Not really. It's not to that point yet. And one indication where, as a prominent sports franchise consultant has told me, he said it's probably, he advised me a while ago that it's probably not on the particulars are not on the owner's minds right now, as far as especially pertaining to the lease. And I asked, you know, we know all about that now, obviously the prohibitive lease and the restrictive lease and the non-relocation agreement. But I asked Mayor about it. And, you know, I said, you know, why would the NFL approve an ownership group from Toronto that would necessitate five lame duck years at the Ralph for that team before they moved it at the first out clause, which is in February 2020. And he's like, well, you know, I'm not really that aware of those particular details of the lease. He goes, others would be. So right there, you get a sense that, you know, this guy's as plugged in as anybody in the NFL among the owners. And even he's not quite into that stage yet of trying to digest all the really intricate matters that surround this sale.
Yeah. Hey, John, for years here in Buffalo and Western New York, people worried that once Mr. Wilson had passed, that there were some owners, certain owners, and maybe more than a couple, who would be interested in moving the franchise to a bigger market to maximize revenues, that it would somehow help their revenues to be in a Los Angeles or a Toronto. I don't detect anybody saying that, at least, and maybe not even feeling that. Did you?
A little bit from Jerry Jones.
Right,
He was asked a little bit about that, and he would always kind of couch it. And one breath he would say, you know, I had immense respect for Ralph Wilson. He said, I'm paraphrasing him now, but he said, you know, he had immense respect for him as an owner, and he even viewed him as a founder of the NFL, even though, you know, he founded the franchise, of course, when it was in the AFL, we all know. But he then would talk a little bit about the Toronto market and saying, you know, well, you know, it's, you know, you want to grow the pie, I think was his term, for revenues for the whole league, not just the team. So, you know, for some owners, I'm sure Toronto, I mean, it, as we've talked about before, it's after New York and Los Angeles, and some ways that you can calculate population, Toronto's now the third largest market in North America. And of course, after Los Angeles, it's by anybody's count, the largest market in North America without an NFL team. So, I could see why, you know, those, some of the NFL owners who have dollar signs for eyeballs, you know, they would want to try to move a team there eventually, perhaps. But then, of course, we, as I have been writing now for about a month, and, you know, it's not a secret that this, it's no longer a secret that the NFL, that this non-relocation agreement and lease, is prohibitive. And as, now as I keep writing, I don't see a way, even though I'm in Toronto and people say, well, why are you writing this? You're in Toronto. You know, I've got some Toronto people saying, why are you saying it? So you're saying it's unlikely the team will move. It's because I can't get my head around the fact, and I have not heard anybody give me, even among a couple owners that I talked to, give me a reason why the NFL would approve a group they suspect would want to move the team to Toronto, when that would mean 5 years, not three games like in Cleveland Browns in 1995, but 5 years of lame duck status. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, it's that lame duck status that seems to be the hurdle as far as Toronto and the Buffalo Bills. And and in many respects, John, and Russ Brandon talks about this a lot, talked about it today on WGR Radio. It's almost like this is the way Mr. Wilson planned it, like an ordered, methodical way to transfer the franchise, to have a almost a grace period for the franchise to remain in Buffalo while the while the ownership situation is settled. It almost seems like this was the design all along for Ralph Wilson.
Well, remember that story that I wrote in late March, the day after he died, that Mark Gannis, that prominent sports consultant who's been widely quoted now, he said that this was Ralph Wilson's last great gift to the people of Buffalo. And he said it was no coincidence that that is what ended up going in there. Now, I've since found out that they had to fight tooth and nail, the state and the county, to get the, not just the Bills but the NFL to agree to that very restrictive clause and non-relocation agreement, or sorry, lease and non-relocation agreement. But that could be. One person described it to me as, you know, because nobody really knows what's exactly what directions might be in his actual will as far as the future of the franchise. But one person described to me in Atlanta as he didn't need to because of that lease and non-relocation agreement. That pretty much has served the purpose.
We're on the line with John Crick. He covers the NFL for the Toronto Sun. He was at the NFL owners' meetings, the spring meetings in Atlanta. We're going to get to some of the other issues, but let's keep continuing talking about the Bills' future, and especially as it relates to Toronto, John. And what's the status of the current ownership candidates in Toronto? Is it there were talk of two competing groups. Is that still in play in Toronto?
Well, I'm pretty close to it, and I don't know that there's more than one. If there is definitely more than one, then that's being kept extremely quiet. And the wild card, I've not written about it much, but the wild card, and I have said this, is Edward Rogers III,
right,
who is the heir and the chairman of Rogers Communications, which oversees everything, not just Rogers Media, takes care of the Rogers Center and the cable channels and the cable company, which is like Comcast, you know, a monstrous Comcast on steroids in Canada, very prominent and powerful cable company, but also all the telecommunications and cell phones and everything else that Rogers handles. So anyway, Edward, whether he would want to join the Larry Tannenbaum, John Bon Jovi group, or bid on his own, I just don't know if there's anybody out there that knows that. Maybe he doesn't even. It's possible he might. It's possible if he does that he would keep the team in Buffalo if he bid on it and won it. That is just not known. So if there is a second bid group out of Toronto, I don't know who's in it.
The Larry Tannenbaum group is the primary group. And has that group or any, have there been any reports of what they think about the non-relocation agreement and how to get around the lame duck period that you've reported about, John?
No, there isn't. I don't know that there is a way around it.
Right.
the sports experts, plural, that I've talked with, who have, you know, done some really big deals, don't believe that there is. And in fact, as one, which was I know was a controversial story down there a couple of weeks ago, but I stand by the story because the sports consultant I sourced on that story stands by it, which is that, you know, he's not even sure a team could come out and announce an eventual intention even to relocate the team. That he thinks that might, as I wrote, could be that he could get a lawsuit slapped on him so fast by either the county or the state. And I know that Mark Poloncarz, the Erie County chief executive, came out and said that that wasn't the case. That after 2020, a team could express an intention to move the team after 2020. But the source that I spoke with isn't so sure. I mean, it's all legal interpretations, but his advice, he told me, if he was hired by the Toronto Big Group, would be to don't say anything and don't express any intentions to relocate the team until after the expiry of the entire 10-year lease, which would be after the 2022 season.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But it'd be hard. I mean, as soon as if that group were to attain ownership of the Buffalo Bills, then everybody knows that that's the plan, or at least everybody would assume that, right?
Well, that's it. You know, how do you put the genie back in the bottle?
Right.
And, you know, to their credit, Larry Tannenbaum has not said a word publicly about this at any point in time, even going back to last fall when that first John Bon Jovi story broke. The only person that said anything publicly was in one interview with the Toronto Star, Tim Rywicki, one of the chiefs of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment Empire, said that, yes, I'm close with, I'm paraphrasing, he's close friends with John Bon Jovi. They talk every week about their NFL aspirations. And confirmed confirmed what we know now to be true, or at least is the intention to bid. Nobody's bid yet because it's not officially on sale yet. But John Bon Jovi has not come out and said he's going to bid on the Bills. I had that story last month in which his publicist said that he is still very eager, whatever the words he used, to pursue in his pursuit of an NFL. In pursuit of NFL ownership, but mentioned nothing with regard to the Toronto bid. So they could come out, I suppose, and say, hey, we've never said we're going to relocate the team to Toronto. Those have only been in reports.
Yeah.
Well, I have sources that tell me that that's exactly the intention, and that's why I report it that way. One other thing I can tell you is I know this is not exactly a bombshell of news in Western New York and will come as no surprise, but I was told this evening that Thomas Golisano, the former Buffalo Sabres owner, indeed plans to bid on the Bills once the team goes on sale, and that he will either act alone or in partnership with a local businessman. And either way, he intends to be the lead bidder, and once it goes on sale, which is supposed to be within 30 days, that the investment bank and the law firm will officially start accepting and soliciting bids, that when that happens, that he'll be seeking NFL pre-approval.
That's pretty interesting. One more thing from the Toronto perspective, John, and the Bills are on the front burner now because, as you say, they're weeks, if not a month away from officially being on the market, but as the Tannenbaum Group or anybody, from what you know, would they look elsewhere? I mean, there are stadium issues and lease issues in places like St. Louis and San Diego and Jacksonville. I mean, are they at that point where they would look elsewhere?
I would expect so. I mean, this is not John Bon Jovi's first attempt to try to become an NFL owner. Ted Rogers, who's now passed on, Edwards' father, he was very publicly involved with trying to land one of those expansion teams in the 90s that eventually went to, I think, Carolina and Jacksonville. And perhaps I think there might have been a couple of relocations in there where they tried to get a team to move up. Once even when Indianapolis was, if I recall correctly from my associate sports editor days, when Indianapolis was on the rocks a bit before the Peyton Manning years, when there was uncertainty there that perhaps they might be willing to relocate. So to answer your question, if nothing happens with the Bills, I would think yes. But then, would the NFL put a team in Toronto if the Bills remain in Buffalo? That is uncertain because right now the Bills rely on Ontario by, I think it's 18%. Chris Brandon told me earlier this year, 18% of all the bums in the seats at Ralph are crossing one of the three bridges there to get over. So for each game, for each home game. So I'm not sure the NFL would look at that as something that they would want to do. I asked that very question of Roger Goodell at the annual meeting in late March, and he said that's not something the league has looked at closely, but that, you know, his intention would be to continue to have people from Southern Ontario support the Bills.
One more question about the Bills and Toronto, John. Is anybody bemoaning the fact of the one-year suspension, I guess, of the Bills in Toronto series. And does that play into any of this at all, the fact that that series was not, you know, real popular among the fans in Toronto?
No, I'll find Waldo on my kid's books long before I find one person that laments that.
Yeah,
and I always give up real early. It hurts my eyes.
We're on the line with John Crick. He covers the NFL for the Toronto Sun. He was at the owners' meetings. The owners managed to award a Super Bowl, but they didn't do anything about playoff expansion, John. I don't know how deeply you got into that, but that seems like it's fairly inevitable that the playoffs will expand after the 2015 season, correct?
It seems so, yeah. Before they announced that, you know, it's something that Goodell had said very much that he is in favor of and thinks a lot of the owners are. I think he said that at the annual meeting. But there's issues there with the NFLPA, and it seems to be some disagreement. Jerry Jones suggested on Monday that the league does not require approval by the players' union to proceed in that way. But I think the league wisely, I think they cited the fact that, well, we're starting a whole new Thursday night initiative. Well, not really. It's just going to be airing on different networks. But they're starting this new Thursday night initiative, and maybe they shouldn't, you know, add playoff games in the same year. I think that was just a clumsy way for them to say that, you know, this isn't the time to go ahead and approve it. And it was highly unlikely, reports had said for a couple of months, that it would even begin this season. So they can still easily approve it in time by even as late as next year's spring meeting, wherever that will be held, next May. They could still approve it in May 2015 in time for the postseason of 2015. So I don't think there's any rush on it now. John Mara told me just before this all kind of broke out that there would not be a vote yesterday, nor was he sure there would be one even in the fall. So, but even if that comes to pass, don't panic. I mean, it still is likely to come. He lamented in that, you know, because he's not in favor of it, but he realizes, and he told a Packer reporter shortly after that, that is definitely the wish of the majority of the owners, and it's probably almost certain to pass when it ever does come to a vote.
I love what I've read about how they might tie that in with the reduction of the preseason to just 3 preseason games per team. I would welcome that, right? That'd be great.
Well, if you really want to make the fans happy, kill some of the preseason games. I mean, not just for the ticket buyers, but just for everybody in general. There is nothing as useless on the sports counter as calendar as prominent as the NFL is on both sides of our border. There is nothing as superfluous as an NFL preseason game, especially that last one.
What did you make of the awarding of the Super Bowl 52, to Minneapolis? I guess the NFL follows its longstanding tradition of build a stadium, get a Super Bowl, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, when you can beat New Orleans out of a Super Bowl, it had been 10 for 10.
Yeah.
It almost bid.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can beat New Orleans out of a Super Bowl, what's the big reason? The big reason is as what you just said, build a stadium, get a Super Bowl.
I guess New Orleans, to me, that was also maybe a slap back at New Orleans for the debacle of the lights going out the last Super Bowl. Do you agree?
No, I don't.
Really?
I don't think that had anything to do with it. I mean, they're going to have, even if they just approved it next year, 2 years later, they'd still have 2 years to, you know, run some wire. I think they could, somewhere in America, they could uncoil and get enough generators on barges even going up the Mississippi to make that sucker work with backups. You know, I don't think that was the issue at all. I really don't. It might have been the case, but I don't think so. I think it was, you know, because it was pretty much New Orleans' turn, right? If you've had 10 Super Bowls in 50 years, then you're getting it every 5 years, right? So it would have been their almost natural turn in the progression anyhow. But Minnesota not only got a new stadium, but they forced the governments to kick in like $500 million to build that stadium. I think it's exactly what it was. So that's the way they not only reward, I think it's kind of termed by the league that, you know, we're rewarding the teams for getting it. I guess that's kind of true. They're rewarding the teams for strong-arming the local governments to kick in all that money, and that's the reward because, of course, they reap in so much by way of, you know, tourism for that week and a half surrounding the Super Bowl.
And just back for a second to wrap things up to the push for NFL in Toronto, John, is there a sense there? I know you do this for a living, and this is why you're at the meetings, but is there a sense that this is the time, that the opportunity is there with the sale of the Bills, even with all the complications that you talked about for non-relocation? Is there a sense that this is the time that something has to happen?
Well, I think there's still, when the Bills in the Toronto series, Bills in Toronto series started, I think that really gave a lot of people here, for whatever reason, this not just in anticipation, just the expectation that, okay, this is the first step. The Bills are coming here. And I'm, of course, there's a lot of Bills fans that began worrying about that instantaneously. But my sense is that there's still a lot of people that think it's going to happen. And that's part of the reason why I'm writing these stories as emphatically as I am, to try to say, you know, cut through the almost lazy, hazy expectation fog that people think that they're going to get the team here. Even at our own Toronto Sun website, I think it was yesterday, where we had a poll, do you think John Bon Jovi is going to get the team? And well over half said yes. So, I mean, I think there's people here that are just expecting that they deserve a team, and so they're, you know, maybe just not looking at the particulars that closely right now. So I stick to what I've been writing, that I really, I'm having a hard time seeing how it's even possible.
And let me just ask you one more question on this point. The Toronto fans, I know there's some affinity. I mean, you know, the Leafs and the Sabres, and there's all that bad blood, but do they really want to steal Buffalo's team, do you think, Toronto fans?
I don't know if it's stealing the team so much. I mean,
it is.
It would be. Yeah. I mean, maybe in their eyes. I mean, if they don't call it the Bills, I mean, does people in you know what I mean? Like the Houston Texans, were they stolen when the owner relocated them? I'm not sure if that's the right way, especially when it's a bid, right? But I don't think they look at it that way. With Toronto, let's just say the Bills are out of the equation, that they're, you know, they're either going to be there for forever or they've relocated to L.A., what have you. Does Toronto deserve an NFL team? Yes. Would the people here support their own NFL team, unlike the way they have completely not supported the Bills and Toronto series? Yes. I tell people that, and I've told you that before those Bills and Toronto series, that it's an entirely different thing when it's your own team. And the analogy I use, which has been, I've had people in L.A. agree with me on it, is like the Chargers didn't make the playoffs for 14 years in a row, and you're trying to now have the Chargers play one home game up about an hour and a half away up in Los Angeles. Would that game sell out once a year? And I'm told absolutely not, it wouldn't. So that's the situation. If this had been the early 90s, you couldn't get a ticket to watch Jim Kelly and all those guys play at the Sky Dome then. You couldn't. It would have been the biggest draw of the year at the Sky Dome, even over the Blue Jays.
That's going to be interesting. It always is. John, thank you for spending time with us tonight. I know you've had a long week down there in Atlanta, and we appreciate you carving out some time for us tonight. Thanks.
Always appreciate you being on your show and letting me talk about it. Thanks a lot, John.
John Crick covers the NFL, including the Buffalo Bills, for the Toronto Sun. He's just back from the meetings in Atlanta. Get his perspective on the Bills and Toronto. I didn't say the Bills in Toronto, but the Bills and Toronto, and what the future holds. And quite frankly, no one knows, but you can speculate. And there are a couple of pieces in play here, including the non-relocation agreement, which, as John Crick has reported and which he just reiterated, makes it pretty difficult to imagine a team buying the Buffalo Bills and then sitting on them as a lame duck for six seasons until you are able to move them. It's just hard to imagine how that would work. I don't think it would work at all, quite frankly. And that's just one aspect of it. Oh, by the way, there is no stadium in Toronto right now either. But who knows? No one knows how this is going to work out. What we do know today is that the Bills took another step forward by announcing the hiring of two advisors for the next step of the sale. The Bills announcing that Morgan Stanley has been retained to serve as the financial advisor, and the law firm of Proskauer Rose has been hired as the legal advisor during the sale process. And the Bills announcing that the transaction team is going to start contacting prospective buyers within the next 30 days. So there's that. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll turn our focus back to the field. When we return, we're going to talk about the Miami Dolphins, longtime rivals for the Bills in the AFC East. Chris Perkins, who covers the Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, is going to be on the line with us when we return. Are you really playing John Bon Jovi?
Van Halen, John.
Van Halen? Good. Thank you. All right. Whew. We're going to break. We got more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
On the air till 9 o'clock tonight, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. You know what? I'm proud that I don't know the difference between Bon Jovi and Van Halen. I really am. I'm proud. They're both just out there. Neither one of them means anything to me. I'm not going to sign a petition or anything, but I don't care about John Bon Jovi.
You might get some calls on that one.
Yeah, all right, sure. Yeah, disagree with me. React to me. All right, we've talked about the Bills draft over the last few weeks. Obviously, we've talked about their opponents, including the Jets and the Patriots. Time tonight, take a look at what the Miami Dolphins did a couple of weeks ago in the NFL draft. Joining us on the line is the beat writer who covers the Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, Chris Perkins. Chris, thank you very much for being with us. How are you tonight?
Hey, John, I'm doing good, man. I'm you know, I gave the Dolphins a C-plus on their draft, and some of the fans have gotten on me on Twitter a little bit, saying everybody else gave them a B, so... I'm not coming off of it. I'm giving them a C-plus, John. I'm sticking to my guns till proven otherwise.
Yeah, good for you. I have I mean, some of the picks, I don't know if they're head-scratchers, but in the first round, 19th overall, the Dolphins go to the tackle, Juwan James. He clearly is maybe the fourth best offensive line prospect in this draft. But what did you think of the first pick overall? The good tackles were already gone. That's what I'm trying to say at that point, Chris. Do you agree?
Yeah, the good tackles were gone, John, and what they did was they filled their need. You know, a lot of coaches and general managers like to talk about best player available, but the Dolphins overdrafted. They filled the number one need on the team, which was right tackle. So, you know, to me, it was a good pick. Yes, you did overdraft, but if you trade down, you risk him not being there. He was available. Go get him. You plug the hole. You know, now let's hope it works out for the Dolphins' sake.
Were they looking for somebody else maybe that might be available to them at 19? And in particular, I'm thinking of the Notre Dame guy, Zach Martin, who went at 16.
Yeah. Zach Martin would have been the ideal because Zach Martin projects as a tackle or a guard, both of which the Dolphins needed. But, you know, it was going to be a long shot whether he was going to be there. They weren't going to trade up to get any of those other top tackles. They just traded up last year to get Deion Jordan, the defensive end, at number three. Yeah. He was disappointing with 26 tackles and 2 sacks. So they took what they could get, and, you know, it filled the number one need on the team, and I think that's the most important thing with that pick.
Filling needs is one thing, but scouts and a lot of NFL people will tell you that's how you get in trouble in the draft, isn't it, when you just concern yourself with filling needs?
You know what? I disagree with that, John. And here's the thing. If you're not going to fill your needs through the draft, when are you going to fill them? You know, at free agency, you're going to pay a whole lot for a guy, and you're probably not going to have him for very long. So, you know, I know they like to talk about best player available and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, for the Dolphins, you needed a left tackle. You got Brandon Albert in free agency. You didn't get a right tackle in free agency. And so, you know, you feel that need. Now, in the second round, the Dolphins got wide receiver Jarvis Landry out of LSU. That was a best player available pick. They don't really need another wide receiver. They've got Mike Wallace, Brian Hartline, Brandon Gibson. Hartline and Gibson are coming off knee injuries, but they think they'll be okay. So that was a best player available. Now you've got four receivers. Well, you think if Jarvis Landry can play, but that was a good pick. And then in the third round, they get Billy Turner, the tackle from North Dakota State, who projects to be a guard. Again, you're filling a need. You need two guards. He might not have been the best player available, but you've got to fill those needs, John.
We're on the line with Chris Perkins. He covers the Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And I wanted to ask you about that third-round pick, Billy Turner. I saw a lot of him at the Senior Bowl in Mobile back in January. And he comes from a smaller college, North Dakota State, but a great raw prospect who probably needs some seasoning to be a successful offensive lineman. But are they going to give him time to grow and learn there in Miami, or are they going to just throw him into the fire, do you think, Chris?
Man, I think if he's worth the third-round pick, he'll get thrown into the fire at one of those starting guard positions. Now, he played right tackle in the Senior Bowl,
yep.
And strangely enough, Juwan James was the left tackle. And so, you know, he did play predominantly tackle at North Dakota State. I believe he was a two-time All-American. But, you know, he's played, I think he played one day of guard at the Senior Bowl, he said, and everybody liked what he did. And I
yep.
believe he might have played some guard at North Dakota State early in his career. But the point is, he's a tackle making the transition to guard. So on top of him being a rookie, he's changing positions. And I'll tell you this, too, John, you know, Billy Turner told us that they've tried him at both guard positions, the Dolphins could have a rookie right guard in Billy Turner and a rookie right tackle in Juwan James. Does that make the offensive line better or worse than last year? We'll have to wait and see.
That clearly was the problem last year for the Dolphins, right? I mean, that clearly was what they needed to address in the offseason, and they did. Now, when you look at the whole picture, both in free agency and through the draft, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, again, they picked up Brandon Albert, right. Pro Bowl left tackle from Kansas City. They signed Shelly Smith, a guard from Houston who's never been a starter. You draft Billy Turner, who's, you know, projected to be a guard. And then you have Juwan James. Now, you did address your needs. Now, on the other hand, you're going to have four new starters. Mike Pouncey, the center, returns. Four new starters, and you could have two rookie starters. So there's going to be some growing pains if everybody projects out how well you think that they'll project out. You could have two rookie starters, but, you know, I'm very wait and see on how good this offensive line turns out to be, John. It's different faces, and it's an upgrade in talent in some respects. But I'm waiting to see. I don't think they're going to allow 58 sacks again.
Right.
But I'm waiting to see on how much better this offensive line is.
On the topic of, pass protection, in the draft, fifth round, Arthur Lynch, tight end from Georgia. Is there a role for him to play in his first year, or does he have to sit and maybe watch a little bit, what do you think?
Well, here's the thing, John. They've drafted a tight end, I believe, about the last 4 years now. Charles Clay is the starter. He's the athlete. He's the pass-catching tight end. 2 years ago, you drafted Michael Agnew in the third round. He was supposed to be a pass-catching tight end. He really hasn't developed into a good blocker or a good receiver. You've got Deion Sims, the rookie from last year, and he's more of a blocker, but he's really not up to snuff. And so, yeah, that brings you back around to Arthur Lynch again. He's more of a blocking tight end. They could use somebody in short yardage and goal line and situations like that. But they could also use a receiving tight end to match up with Charles Clay, run some two tight end offenses. Joe Philbin likes to do that. But, I just don't know if Jordan Lynch is going to be the answer. I think they needed a receiving tight end more than a blocking tight end. He seems to be more of a blocking tight end, but we'll see if there's room for him.
Chris, the Dolphins, I mean, ahead of the Bills last year with 8 wins, 8 losses, how have they improved themselves substantially in this offseason, do you think? I know they spent most of the time shoring up those holes on the offensive line, but are they better or just kind of plugging holes at this point?
I think they're just kind of plugging holes at this point. You know, what really needs to happen for this Dolphins team is to get a boost from last year's draft class, the top part of that draft class, and that's Deion Jordan, the defensive end in the first round, the second round pick, Jamar Taylor, the cornerback from Boise State, the third round pick, Will Davis, the cornerback from Utah State, and then the other third round pick, Dallas Thomas, the guard from Tennessee. That's where they need to really, pick up some momentum and get things going. And if those guys come through, now you're looking at actually taking a step forward. But if those guys are kind of doing the same thing they did last year, this team is just kind of treading water. Lewis Delmas, that they picked up from Detroit at free safety. Cortland Finnegan picked up from St. Louis at a cornerback. You know, that the pickups they made, the guys have a little age on them. You know, aside from Brandon Albert, the free agents aren't all that impressive. Earl Mitchell, defensive tackle from Houston. You know, these guys are kind of plugging holes. They need the youngsters, the guys that they drafted high the last year and this year, to come through to me if this team is really going to make some progress. They picked up Sean Marino also at running back. But, I still see them, John, as really right now to me, without having training camp, an 8-8 team again.
Hmm. And you wrote a story today at the Sun Sentinel about the 10 most important young players on the Dolphins roster, and it stands to reason that number one on your list is Ryan Tannehill, now going into his third year. He's had some success, and you write that there's reason to believe he'll be better than last year. Why do you think that, Chris?
I think that he'll be better, but we just don't know how much better. Ryan Tannehill he should have a better offensive line. He should have better pocket presence. You know, a lot of those 58 sacks last year were Tannehill's fault. He should have stepped up in the pocket. He should have gotten rid of the ball. He should have done something differently. He should have pulled it down and run a little bit. So he should be better at that. He should have better accuracy this year. But look, here, this is a quarterback who threw for almost 4,000 yards, 24 touchdowns, 17 interceptions. That's not that great. You know, that's not that great. He has improved each year, but, you know, Tannehill really needs to be somewhere around, you know, I would say 27 touchdowns and, you know, maybe 10 or 12 interceptions to really lead this team, because this team does still have some deficiencies as it stands right now. I think there's more pressure on Tannehill or more responsibility on Tannehill to lead this team until we see some other guys step up, until we see Mike Wallace is going to have a Pro Bowl year, no Sean Marino or one of those linebackers. I think the bulk of it lies on Tannehill. I think he'll be improved, but I don't know if he'll be improved enough to get this team to the playoffs.
Well, we won't have to wait long to get our first look. Week two, the Dolphins up here to play the Bills, the home opener for the Bills. That should be a fun one, Chris. We thank you very much for your time tonight. Thanks for talking to us.
Anytime, Jeff.
All right. Chris Perkins covers the Miami Dolphins for the South Florida Sun Sentinel. He went over some of the draft picks, including Juwan James, the tackle, 19th overall. Chris nailed it when he talked about, you know, a bit of a reach, but I guess you do fill your needs. The scouts will tell you, you know, you want to go best available. You don't want to reach, but they had a crying need for offensive line after the decimation up front for them last year. And an interesting player, I think, in the third round, Billy Turner from North Dakota State, as raw a prospect as you'll find coming into the NFL, but a tremendous physical specimen and a guy who, you know, maybe they plug him in and play him right away at guard. He might struggle a little bit, but I think he might have the tools to be a pretty good pro down the line. All right, we're going to take a break. Come back with more of your thoughts, if you have any, on the Bills, the Dolphins, the Bills rookie tour that we were talking about earlier. Phone lines are open at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A couple of minutes left in the show. We talk about this around the draft, and if you haven't done so already, you really should look at the Buffalo Bills Touch app for your iPad, Windows, or Android tablet device today. There's a stadium renovation guide that has an interactive virtual tour, behind-the-scenes video. There's photo galleries updated regularly. It's really the best place to go for your tablet. Buffalo Bills Touch, you can download it for free in the Apple iTunes Store, the Windows App Store, and the Google Play Store. And tap into an essential tool that brings you closer than ever to your team, the Buffalo Bills. Got a couple of minutes left here and time to take some phone calls. We were talking earlier about the Bills rookie tour, which has wrapped up for the day. The Bills rookie tour included a visit to Niagara Falls, to the New Era Cap Company on Delaware Avenue, to the Naval and Servicemen's Park, and to the Pierce Aero Museum in Buffalo. Where would you like to see him go with that tour? What would indoctrinate the rookies to the Bills in Western New York in your mind? Frank in Amherst has an idea. Frank, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, John, I'm kind of like you. I would give them a little tour of the history of Buffalo, and the place I would actually take them is first sort of the 9/11 of Buffalo, which is the site of the Temple of Music, where McKinley got assassinated.
Yeah. Where is that? It's north of Delaware Park, right?
Yeah, yeah, right on McKinley, near the school there.
Yeah.
And, you know, the reason for that is I would tell them that, you know, this city back in 1902 was the site of the Pan Am Exposition and probably the richest city in the country, and everything was going well. But, you know, I think in a way maybe people kind of got ahead of themselves, and then, you know, it kind of went downhill from there. And then I would also show them, you know, the Harbor Center and UB, just to let them see that, you know, this city's on the rise and, you know, things are getting better.
Yeah, good point, Frank. There's a story to be told. There's no question about that, about what's gone on in Buffalo over the last few years and comparing it to what went on in Buffalo 100 or more years ago. I agree with that. A really good story to be told about that. And although not all of the players would appreciate that, I think some might. And I don't know, do they play harder? Probably not. It doesn't matter in that sense. But I do think they would benefit from having an appreciation of where they are, the place where they are, and what goes on here and what's important to people here. I think they would benefit from that. And, you know, carry it forward as ambassadors. I mean, I know that's something that Coach Marrone has talked about right from the time when he first got hired a year ago, when he talked about we have a higher calling. Do you remember that from Coach Marrone, his message to his players? There's a higher calling to play for, I'm paraphrasing here, to play for the city and the fans in the city. And it means more than just wins and losses here. And I think those players would benefit from hearing that and knowing that that was part of the equation. And a sense of history, I think, can go a long way towards that. They've wrapped it up for today, the rookie tour, but maybe in the future, these are some of the ideas that they could take with them. They do a good job of it. I've been on a couple of them over the years. They really do a good job. They assemble the players here in One Bills Drive in a luxury motor coach, and while they travel, say, from here to Niagara Falls, they give them kind of a narrated tour of what they're seeing, you know, the Bethlehem Steel plant along Route 5 and what was there, what it meant, what used to go on there, and all the way up, I'm sure, to Niagara Falls for the start of their rookie tour today. So I'm sure it was a great time. We talked to a couple of people who are back from the rookie tour, and they say, great time. Everybody had a good time. Everybody got a good sense of what Buffalo's all about. The news from the Bills today dealt with the sale, the future sale of the team. The Bills announcing that they've hired a financial investment bank, Morgan Stanley, to serve as financial advisor, and a law firm to serve as a legal advisor, Proskauer Rose. And the Bills announcing that the quote is, it is anticipated the transaction team, Morgan Stanley and Proskauer Rose, will begin contacting prospective buyers within the next 30 days. And if you heard John Crick from the Toronto Sun, he mentioned that he's going to report that among those interested in throwing his hat into the ring, former Sabres owner Tom Golisano. So we'll see how that plays out. We've got more on the Bills coming up tomorrow. T.J. Graham will join us in studio to talk about his weekend plans for the T.J. Graham Skills Challenge and much more about what goes on here at the voluntary organized workouts that are going on all week long here at One Bills Drive. But that's going to do it for us tonight. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned, locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer is Mike Jafari. Jeff Matthews, the producer. We're back tomorrow night at 7 with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.